He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
Beyond the bend. Beyond the bend.
All right, we're back. I don't know how often I'm going to be doing these, but just frankly, I just miss doing the podcast. And fresh off the heels of the first person to assert the red nail under the new conditions and taking first place in the unbraced section of the Michigan bending and breaking competition this weekend, I present everyone London Sherman. Welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you so much for having me. That means a lot.
I'd say it's about time we had you. You've been tearing it up, obviously, over the last year, maybe a year and a half. I feel like you've been on my radar, and it's just like this crazy, like, increase of like heavier bars, like every week. It's like been very impressive. And I know you grew up as a wrestler, so I want to hear about that too, of course. But let's start it like we always do. Tell me about the first time you saw someone bend a piece of steel.
Okay, so when I was in middle school, they brought these performing strongmen for an assembly. And when they came in, they were doing stuff like breaking baseball bats. And I don't think they were bending steel unless you count the frying pans that they were doing. So I was like, maybe like 12 years old. And I go to this assembly and I see these guys, they're breaking baseball bats, rolling pans, doing the deck of cards, you know, all the classic beats. And once the assembly ended, we all got to walk up to them, like shake hands, talk to them. And I went up to them and I looked at them and I was like, do you guys consider yourselves to be like superhuman? You know, like Stan Lee's superhuman? And they were like, no. Not at all. Nothing like that. So that was like the first time I saw any like performing strongman or any steel being bent. And I think after that, I didn't see anything else until I saw Don Cummings bend steel online. And then I met him in person. And that was the first time I actually saw somebody else in front of me, you know, bend short steel.
Right. Crazy. So was the assembly in school, like, was that like a religious based thing? Because I think a lot of times that's sort of like they're sort of preaching the word of the Bible or whatever through the strength thing. Or was it just like, this is what your will can do kind of thing? What was the connotation of?
Definitely the latter. Because I went to public school and they avoided any type of religious talk or anything like that. But they would bring in like, you know, motivational speakers.
Yeah. You know? Nice. I remember we had like a karate assembly when I was in like second grade, and like one girl did karate, and then like everybody wanted to sit with her at lunch, and it overwhelmed her to the point where she just like cried and like went home for the day. But so you found Don bending steel online. Was that on Instagram or YouTube?
It was on Instagram, actually. Before I was following Don, I was in the grip sport.
Okay.
And back then, I was doing stuff like hub lifting. I really liked the little big horn handle. That was my favorite. And then I saw Devin Hoover, who you had on your podcast, and I saw him bending steel. And I was like, that's really cool. I don't really know much about this. So I started watching his videos and I started following people that bent steel. And one of the first people I followed was Don. And at first, I had no clue that Don actually lived very close to me. He only lives about 30 minutes from me. But, you know, I saw his posts about the Michigan Bending and Breaking Championships. So I was like, oh, this guy's in my state. Maybe he knows somebody like close by to me that knows how to bend steel. So I actually messaged him and I was like, is there anybody in the Metro Detroit area that can like teach me this or show me this? And he asked me where I was from and I told him, and he was like, how about you come by my house and I'll show you what's up. So I went over to his house and he showed me how to bend steel with different techniques. He had me start off with like some 60 pennies and stuff like that. He showed me how to do reverse and double underhand, because I tried double overhand, but my technique was obviously very subpar. And once we got through that, he was like, I want you to try snapping. I actually didn't know snapping was a thing. So he showed me how to snap, and he handed me a 60D he wrapped up. He was like, I want you to try this. And he sat on a couch in front of me and just stared at me for like 10 minutes while I was sweating, trying to get this thing to snap. And after like 11 minutes, it finally snapped. And I felt so proud of myself.
Oh, yeah.
Happy. I was like, oh, my God, I never knew I could do this.
Yeah.
And it all pretty much started from there. After that, I was pretty hooked. And, you know, I did as much research as I could, as just try my best to find out more about it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. I have like a similar story, because when I first got my like bag of nails, I think I had heard David Horn's podcast with Dan Strauss, the Raspberry Ape, who's like sort of the reason any of this exists, because he was my basically gateway through jiu-jitsu into all of this. And I remember talking to David Horn on Facebook Messenger, and I like sent just like a picture of like a bent green nail or something, which is like a toothpick, you know. And he's like, yeah, now snap it. And I like worked on this thing for probably like 20 minutes or something, and I felt like such a great feat, you know, like the wraps were all loose and it was probably like so messed up. And it's just like the snapping, when you first do it, it's so crazy hard, and then you can get so much more efficient at it. It's crazy.
Yeah, but it's weird to me, because I remember when I first saw like 60Ds, mm-hmm. those things look huge to me. Yeah. Like, yeah. When I first saw them, these things were like threatening to me. I had like no idea I could bend anything like that. Yeah. And now time has moved on, I look at a 60D and it just kind of looks like a timber tie. You know?
Yeah. So tell me about how you found your way through athletics as a kid up into, because you're a pretty young dude, so this probably won't be too long. But take me through like what you started out as far as athletics and strength stuff as a kid, to where you found grip, and then through that you found the bending.
So when I was younger, my family really didn't do sports or anything like that. None of them like really were super into athletics. When I was a kid, my parents signed us all up for swimming. You know, I think that was more or less just to teach us how to swim rather than being athletic.
Sure.
So after going through like maybe like 10 years of like not doing anything after that, I got into high school and I was going to join the swim team originally. And then, you know, I saw the list of sports. I saw that wrestling was a winter sport too. And it interested me. I was like, this is something different. I don't know anything about it. I'd love to try it out. So I took a bit of convincing, but my parents signed me up and everything like that. And when I first got into wrestling, I came into the room and I thought I'd be great. You know, I was like, I way overhyped myself. I was like, I must be like badass or something. Like, I'm sure I'm going to do great. And I was humbled really quickly, you know, obviously. And I spent quite a bit of time, you know, looking up at the ceiling, getting pinned and stuff before I got any good. So I did wrestling for about 4 years, and I pretty much did it year round. When I was off the season, I'd go to clinics and I'd go to camps and my biggest goal was to get as much mat time as possible. And when I graduated high school, I was 150 pounds and I didn't have any wrestling after high school or anything like that, because there's not much opportunity outside of, you know, NCAA, college, and the Olympics. There's little to no opportunity for wrestling outside of that. For jiu-jitsu and grappling, there's a lot of opportunity. But I was unfamiliar with jiu-jitsu, so I was rather uncomfortable starting that. So I didn't really have an outlet or anything like that after high school. And I was talking to my coach, and he was like, you know, you should just hit the weight room. You should just go pump some iron or something. You know, I don't really see you do that. You get a lot of mat time. You're a fit guy, sure, but, you know, you don't really work out. And after that, I started going to the gym, like this little commercial gym right by me. And I didn't really know anything about working out. Like, I knew how to wrestle. I was in good shape, but I didn't know anything about training or strength training or anything like that. So the first day I went into the gym, the only lift I really knew how to do was deadlift. Because it's simple enough, right? You just pick something up off the floor. And I loaded up a bar and I did 135. I was like, okay, that was easy enough. Went to 225. Okay, easy enough. And I managed to get up to a 315 double overhand deadlift my first day. I was really happy with that.
Yeah.
After that, you know, I kept training in the gym and I was just doing the same like 3x10 for like 3 months and I wasn't getting any better. So I started like researching strength training. And after a while, I got my numbers up there pretty good. And I used to think there was only like one way to train. You know, I thought like you either did like strength training or hypertrophy and anything else like calisthenics or all that other training, like mobility training and stuff. I thought that was a waste of time. I didn't really expand my horizons into other forms of training until I started seeing more and more athletes on Instagram and YouTube and other things. And I kind of realized, you know, there's more than one way to be strong. And after realizing that, I opened up my horizons a little bit and I got into grip sport and grip training. And then I joined a local arm wrestling team. And we got to be a pretty big team. And right when I started arm wrestling was around the time I started bending steel. And, you know, that's basically how I met Don, was when I got into bending steel. And it all pretty much skyrocketed from there.
So how were you finding these things? Was it again through Instagram? Like, how did you get hip to grip sport? Did you just see some people doing stuff online or?
So I originally liked to watch strongmen and stuff like that. And I saw the Thomas Inch dumbbell and that kind of piqued my interest. I was like, I didn't know much about grip. So I just researched it. I just looked into it and I learned about arm lifting and I learned about, you know, Iron Mind and grippers and stuff like that. I had no idea that like grippers were really a thing.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much how I like got more, like the more I started to see and learn about it, the more like I actually got into it and it went from there.
Yeah. Cool. So what were the next steps after that afternoon at Don's house when you did a little bit of every style? Did Don send you home with some stuff to work on, or what was like the next step right after that?
So before I went to Don's house, I already had ordered the beginner kit from Devin Hoover from his eChalk Get Big website. So yeah. I already had some wraps and I already had like a bunch of 6 CDs, and that's pretty much all I needed to work with at the time being a beginner, you know. So I just kept trying to do research and kept trying to watch videos, and that was pretty much it, you know. And time went on and I trained with him a little bit more here and there, not as often as I would have liked. You know, he's a busy guy, you know, he's a family man, so I can't blame him on that.
Right, of course. And it's crazy, like, to hear once again that it was Devin who you saw like in the beginning, because Devin was one of the first guys I saw bending too. And it just shows, like, as much as hashtags are like goofed on and are kind of silly, and especially like it feels cringe when you're like putting one on a post, like that's how people find the stuff, man. It's like it's important, and it's like, thank goodness for Devin and Don and these guys hashtagging steel bending, or else like you wouldn't have found it probably.
No, I gotta be really thankful that I would message guys like Devin, Don, and Josh Goldthorpe too. He was one of the first guys I talked to, and I would show them a bent 60 penny, you know, that I did double overhand, and they would be like, great job, keep it up, you know. And yeah. Then I'd show Josh that I almost got a grade 5, like a quarter inch 6 inch grade 5. And, you know, they did nothing but encourage me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the beauty of it, is everybody is so positive. Like, while there is a sort of like the nature of this type of thing is, like, I think my friend Dave put it really well, where it's like a friendly, like, one-upsmanship, because, like, if someone does something, then the next person, like, cuts a half inch off of it, or it's like the nature of the thing is to sort of just, like, climb these ladders. But at the same time, everybody's so positive about the guy that did just bend his first timber tie or whatever like that. It's I guess because of how small it is, it's nice how supportive of the beginners everybody is.
Exactly. You know, I've never been discouraged by anybody who was into bending steel or grip sport or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So always be friendly.
Yeah, for sure. So what was the first main goal that you had? Like, so you bent to 60D, was the next goal, the grade 5, and then the grade 8, and from there? So, like, what was that progression like?
It was exactly like that, where, so I had the beginner box kit, and I knew a grade 5 was harder than a 60D, and I knew a grade 8 was harder than a grade 5. So I just worked up from there. Like, once I got the grade 5, I was like, nice, okay, I want to get a grade 8. And I was stuck for a little bit, so then I started using double pads, and I was able to do a grade 8, like, easily with double pads. And at first I thought, you know, this is the way to go. I should just use double pads all the time if it lets me bend bigger stuff.
Right.
After talking to Don for a bit, he was like, you should focus less on double pads right now. You should focus on getting tougher hands, and you should focus more on the technique, because your technique is still subpar and your hands aren't very tough.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, I switched back to singles. You know, I wasn't using a Cordura at the time because I didn't own Ironmind pads at the time. I had these very, very thin pair of suedes that I got from Devin Hoover in the kit. They're paper thin, man. Like, I remember showing them to Don, and he held them in his hands, and he was like, wow, these are good. These are very thin.
Yeah.
After that, I got a pair of Ironmind pads, because after a while, I saw that Ironmind pads were like the standard for hand toughness. For like single pad bends, Ironmind pads are a great standard for how tough your hands are. So I went back to Ironmind pads and suedes, and I worked my way up to a 70D. And after that, once I was able to get like a 70D and the red and Ironmind pads, I started using double pads and started chasing bigger bars.
Gotcha. Nice. How'd you get your hands on the 70? Did Devin send you that up, or were you able to, like, source those somewhere?
No, I got all my steel in the beginning. I always bought it from Devin.
Yeah.
You know,
did he send you a drill rod?
In the beginning, no. I think at that time he wasn't, because this was like almost 2 years ago now. I think at that time he wasn't super into drill rod and wasn't selling it a whole bunch. And I think also I was unfamiliar with drill rods. So I started working with like 1/4" by 7" square. And I was a huge fan of the hex pieces. I really like hex a lot.
Yeah, those things are so brutal. They're so freaking hard.
It's my favorite. Out of round, square, and hex, I've always gravitated more towards hex.
Yeah. So how has your training changed during your journey of bending here? I assume in the beginning, when you were just trying to close a grade 8 or whatever, that you were just like out doing it like every single day, probably, right? Just no breaks, just chasing after it.
Actually, I was always pretty conservative with myself, because I never wanted, I've never been seriously injured, knock on wood, you know, but in general with my training, and ever since the beginning, I was always rather conservative. So when I first started bending, I was doing it 1 to 2 times a week. And when I would bend, I'd spend like 1 hour or 2 hours bending. So I didn't really need much more than that. I'd be really beat up or exhausted after that, so I wasn't like bending every day.
Wow. And you kind of kept that going since then, just kind of 1 to 2 days a week or something like that?
Yeah, I've been doing it for 1 to 2 days a week for quite a long time, and that's kind of the schedule I keep it on. I was doing strength training about like 3 to 4 days a week, but I had to cut it down because I was working manual labor. I was doing bending. I was training arm wrestling. I gave up grip sport just because I couldn't fit it in with all my regular training.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I started seeing myself going to the actual gym less and more training at home because it was easier for me. I'd work 70-hour weeks and I wouldn't want to go to the gym. So I'd buy more equipment to train with at home. And, you know, I don't think I've been to an actual like commercial gym in probably about 6 months.
Uh-huh.
You know, I train at my, so I deliver and install appliances for a living. So I'll deliver like fridges, dishwashers, washers, and that's rather taxing work. And we park the truck at my friend's dad's house. And he always had a lot of weights there. So I stopped going to the gym and I started training at my friend's dad's house.
Nice.
And I was always really great friends with his sons. And they were on the arm wrestling team with me too. So they bought an arm wrestling table and like a pulley system. So after some time, I was able to just go to the garage right as soon as we got off work. We'd park the truck, we'd train in the garage, and then I'd go home.
Nice. Yeah, there you go. That'll work. How did you find that, like, I always find it interesting, is did you see any reflection of, like, strength gained from bending and other stuff that you were doing? Or, like, on the flip side, was there anything you were doing in the weight room to try to get yourself stronger for bending, or were they two just separate things?
So I actually love this question. I've had a couple of people ask me this before, especially guys on the arm wrestling team. People from arm wrestling will ask me, like, does this transfer to arm wrestling? And the answer is kind of. So before I was into bending, I had a really big deadlift. Before I started bending, my best deadlift was 500 for 10 reps. And I read this article by Clay Edgen from many years ago. And it talked about like red nail benders and their deadlift strength. And the average guy who could like bend a red at that time was deadlifting at least like 480. You know, some of those guys were pulling like 700 and stuff like that. So I think having a big deadlift, having big traps, and having a really strong back is really good for bending. And on the flip side, I don't think bending transfers to any barbell movements particularly well, but it does have some transfer to arm wrestling. Because when you do reverse bending, you train what's called your riser.
Yeah.
So your hand is going like that. And that's a big part of arm wrestling. Because when you go and you start in the table, a lot of guys will go like that immediately. They'll use their back strength, something called back pressure.
Yeah.
And they'll use their riser right off the go. So if I'm starting and I'm all close to myself, I'm over here, and somebody pulls me all the way here from the start, it's pretty much over, you know? So that's pretty much the only transfer I see from bending to arm wrestling. Uh-huh. And when I have guys that arm wrestle try bending, I always have them try reverse style bending, because none of them have the mobility for double overhand. And yeah. I don't think the double underhand has any transfer to that.
Huh. Yeah, I was thinking, as you said, arm wrestling. I mean, I know nothing about the actual, like, sport of arm wrestling whatsoever. But I was thinking that the wrist strength of reverse would be important on that. I wonder if, like, the out from the body, like the Heslip style or whatever, like, whether underhand or overhand would be beneficial in.
So you know what a pronation is?
Yeah.
So it's like turning a doorknob, right? It's turning over like that. Heslip style is quite the opposite. It's turning this way. So I think that might have like some transfer. Like, you know how people train extensor?
Right.
You got to train the open portion if you're going to train the closed portion.
Right.
You could definitely argue that Heslip style would have some healthy transfer to pronation, but I don't train Heslip style personally, so I'm not sure.
Yeah. That's cool. So are you still arm wrestling or not these days?
I am. I actually, before, I'd say like a week before the bending championship, I actually went to a round robin tournament, And they were only contesting three weight classes that day. So I had to compete in the super heavyweight weight class left-handed. And I actually got some, I ended up getting like four wins or something like that. And some of them were against some guys who were ranked in like 242 in my state. So I was really happy with that.
Hell yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, I consider myself a really active arm wrestler.
Yeah. Nice. That's great. So once you start taking it back to bending a little bit, like, so once you started, what was like the first big bar you took down in doubles? Like that really would just like, felt like, all right, I'm onto something here.
In doubles, I'm trying to remember. I'm having a hard time remembering, but cool. So I pretty much went from red nail to doing, so I did red nail in like single leathers, and then I did a Bent Sport Canada moose bar in the Bent Sport Canada single leathers. And after that, I pretty much went straight from doing red nails and single leathers to doing edgings and doubles.
Okay, yeah.
Once I got into doing edgings, I was able to do a Harito 8.8 pretty easily, and I was really happy with that.
Yeah.
And after doing the 8.8 for some time, I wanted to do the Nibelungen cert.
Yeah.
Because the guys I'd seen that did that cert were Delmar Carter, Sergey Bragin, Alexander Denisovsky, and Josh Goldthorpe. So at the time when I did my Nibelungen cert, there was only four guys that were certed on that. And I was really happy with that result.
Oh yeah, I feel like that one, even the 8.8 is like, I almost feel like that's sort of like the new standard of like, you know, that's like, oh, everybody that bends that thing is like respectable for sure. Like that thing is so damn freaking hard.
So red nail and, you know, single iron vine pads used to be the gold standard.
Right. That's what I was kind of thinking of.
You're a good bender, you know, like you could bend a red nail and iron vine pads. You've got my respect. But nowadays it seems like the 8.8 has kind of taken that slot. And I would say it's about relatively the same difficulty of feet, in my opinion, to bend a red and iron mine pads according to old rules and to do a 8.8 in doubles according to Harito's rules. Those are pretty on par, I think, in terms of feats.
Interesting. Huh. Yeah, so why don't you talk a little bit about just the rule change and your whole experience with being the first person to cert on the new rules for iron mine.
So the rules were pretty vague and I wasn't sure about them. And I had no plans to cert, but after talking with some of my friends for quite a while, they're like, you should do it. You should be the first person to cert under new rules. So I decided to check it out and I emailed Iron Mind and I read their rules and there were three ways to wrap the nails. You know, there was the pads touching method where it was folded into threes, which is what I did. There was the single iron mine pad, like rolled up with an iron mine pad, then you fold the end towards the middle.
Yeah.
And then there was like some hot dog style wrapping, which was really terrible. So I decided to try the pads touching style. And I never did any pads touching bends at that point. So it was a little bit different for me. And it required more hand toughness because I would find that the ends of the nail would jam into my thumb pad and jam into my palm.
Yeah.
So, excuse me, but so I sent them a video of me bending a red nail and with the pads touching double overhand, because I wasn't sure if you could use double overhand, because according to the rules that he wrote, you could only have incidental contact with your body, with a nail in your body.
Yeah.
And if you hold the double overhand bend up by your throat, is that incidental contact or is it not?
Right, right.
You don't really know. So I emailed him and I showed him my form and I was like, is this okay? Is this like acceptable form for the cert? And Randall responded me a couple days later and he was like, yeah, that's fine. You could do it that way. But, you know, I'll need you to do the pre-certification and stuff like that. So you got to measure it on camera and, you know, you got to show your pads and stuff like that. And at first Randall wanted me to use new iron mine pads, and you know how stiff they are, right? When you get new Iron Mind pads, you can't actually roll those things for the life of you. So I was like, Randall, there's no way I'm going to be able to like roll them in the pads touching style. It's going to take me 2 minutes to wrap it. Cause once the nail touches the pads, you have 2 minutes to finish the bend. And I was like, it's going to take me 2 minutes to get those stiff pads all rolled up. Yeah, and he was like, okay, send me a picture of your pads and I'll see if they were acceptable or not. So I was kind of worried at that point because the pads I had, they were super torn, like torn in all sorts of places, but they still had the tags on them.
Yeah.
I sent him a picture, like many different photos of the pads. Mm-hmm. And I was actually really surprised to say, he was like, yeah, those are fine. You can use those. Uh-huh. Go ahead. So I sent him the pre-certification video and you know, he passed me on there. And then he mailed me the cert after that.
Gotcha.
And in all honesty, I think for the red nail, that's a fair way to cert with the pads touching. It's a pretty difficult feat, but yeah. I think for most people, that's pretty achievable. So I think that's a fair standard to have with the pads touching, no rubber bands and stuff like that. That's fine. But I don't ever expect anybody to do the gold nail that way.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It's definitely a bump up in difficulty for sure.
And I started to have issues with Randall after I certed. He asked me what shirt size I needed. I was like, oh, he asked me, he was like, you need an extra large, right? And I was like, yeah, send me an extra large. He sends me a large in the mail. So I was like, well, he sent me a large, I need an extra large. Uh-huh. So he sent me the extra large and he was demanding that I was like supposed to send him the other shirt back, but didn't end up doing that because he asked me to send a picture of myself for the cert, like that he was going to post. Right. That's so nice. I sent him this picture of myself bending another piece and you couldn't even like really tell what the piece was or what was in my hands, but I thought it was a sick picture. Right. Yeah. And he ended up like pulling this still from the video where I look super goofy and like my hair is all over the place and stuff. And I was like, Randall, I don't like that picture at all. You asked me to like send a picture of myself. Why can't you use that one?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was like, well, this photo shows the pads touching and it like supports the feet. And then he flat out told me that the picture I sent him, the other picture of me, didn't look like me, that it was probably a different person. I was like, okay, Randall, you go ahead and use that still. I don't really care.
Right.
And then if you look on the website right now, if you look under the Iron Mind Red Nail certifications, yep. He lists my name under 2022. I did the bend in 2023.
Right.
I had all these things going on with Randall after I started, and I was just like, I'm done talking to him. I'm done going through this, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, those rule changes were pretty crazy and I really didn't think we'd see anybody do it. So it's my hat's off to you to do it with the wraps touching like that. That's impressive.
For sure. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's just, you know, his rules are really vague and I was talking to David Regren for quite a while. And the way that we interpreted it at first was you basically had to have the bend away from your body to prevent any incidental contact that a double overhand would give. So we thought the only way to cert would be like reversing it out in front of you, then crushing it out in front of you. Because when you go to crush in a bend, your hands are sliding across your chest and stuff like that, or touching other parts of your body. Is that incidental contact or no?
Yeah.
Rules are really vague. You know, there was a lot of talk on grip board about how that would be the way to cert. So I don't think anybody had a clear understanding of the rules at that time. And, you know, I don't blame them. They were super vague and weird.
Yeah. And it's kind of the whole thing is just a little bit bizarre because if you look at the roster, right, it's not like you saw an overwhelming number of people each year certing, right? No. It was the opposite. There was years where it would peak and then it would drop down to, and then, you know, I think in 2020 that maybe there was like five, and 2021 there was like three or something like that. And it's like, it's just kind of crazy. And, you know, frankly seems vindictive on his part to change the rules, because it's not like it seemed like it was too easy as it was. It was only interpersonal issues with the gold nail certification. It seems pretty clear.
No, this isn't the first time that he's moved the goalpost or, you know, changed things. So quite frankly, I'm not surprised. But what kind of confused me was he said, due to a number of growing concerns, we're changing the cert. And it's like, what concerns? Who's complaining?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I hear about like older benders, like guys from back in the day who call the double overhand like folding. They don't think that's bending, that's folding instead, which I really disagree with, but I kind of understand where they're coming from. But I don't think any of those guys were complaining about it or talking to Randall about it. So I'm pretty sure those growing concerns only came from him.
Yeah. Really. I feel like we could be pretty certain about that.
Definitely.
So you just competed in Don's competition and took first place in the unbraced section. And this is your second year competing in that?
It is my second year. Yeah. And so
tell everybody a little bit about that experience. I mean, I'm sure anyone that bends would love to make it out one year. I'd certainly love to be out there, even if it was just as a spectator these days. But yeah, so just tell us a little bit about what it's like.
So so there's obviously two portions of the competition, and well, three really. There's the brace, the unbraced, and the medley. And I've always focused on trying to win the unbraced portion because that's what I was always best at. Yeah. So for this year's rules, it was David Horn, World of Grip Bars, and the pads had to be touching. And I was really happy with that because I just spent a lot of time doing the pads touching bends for the rad nail cert. And when I didn't really know much about the strength level of the David Horn World of Grip Bars. And the heaviest bar he had available for the double overhand event was a 221 kg rated bar at a 6 inches and 5/16 length. And I had no idea how difficult that bar was. I didn't really have a clue as to its difficulty. So I wasn't sure how I was going to do. And Alex Guija, who you had on your podcast, was coming to the championship. And he posted a video of himself doing the 221 kilogram bar with David Horn pads touching. And he did it pretty easily, like pretty handily. So I was like, whoa, there's like no way I'm going to like beat this guy. Like I had no idea about the difficulty of the bar. And I was pretty nervous when I was going to drive to Don's house. I was like, I'm not sure if I'm going to win or even get second place or anything like that this year. And I just told myself, you know, you're here to have a good time.
Yeah.
That's what matters most. So I showed up, I met Alex, and that was a very pleasant experience. Alex is a very nice guy, very polite, you know, he's a happy-go-lucky dude. And those are the type of people I like to surround myself with. So we started bending, and the two unbraced events were reverse and double overhand. There was no DU that year. And so I picked out the David Horn World of Grip Bar because we did double overhand first. And you got two attempts. So you had two bars to pick. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to start off with the 221 kg bar. And I get up and, you know, they're getting ready to tie me and stuff like that, cause I'm the first guy to start bending this. And I was really nervous, but I put all that away and it only took me about 12 seconds to finish it. And I was really happy with that result. And Alex tried that bar too, and it took him about 20 seconds. And then Don went up to go try that bar. And I was like, Don's going to get this in like 2 seconds or something like that.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting it in 16 seconds, which surprised me a little bit. So I won the double overhand event from there, and I was pretty happy about that. And we moved on to reverse. And the heaviest bar he had for reverse was a grade 8. That was rated at like 190 kilograms or something.
Yeah.
And I went to go bend the grade 8 reverse, and I did some 5.5 inch grade 5s and Ironman pads touching pretty easily. So I was pretty confident about this one, and I only ended up moving it like like 6 degrees or something, like not very far at all.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay. Well, there we go. There goes that. And then Don went to go bend that too. And he only got like 3 degrees. So overall, I ended up beating Don and unbraced by 3 degrees in 4 seconds.
That's crazy.
Very tiny margins, you know. So
this was with David Horn wraps touching for the reverse as well.
Yeah, exactly. And you could use rubber bands.
Yeah, yeah.
So, makes a little bit of a difference, you know.
That's a hard bend. I attempted that bend the year we did King's Shield for David, and that thing is so stiff, man. If I'm not sure if it was a 190 or a 209 or whatever it was, but
you're talking about the grade 8.
Felt like, yeah, it was a grade 8, and it just felt like my wrists were gonna snap. I probably didn't even get a degree. It was
yeah, so. I remember talking to Don about it, and he was like, these are tough grade 8s, man. Like, these are not the average triangle grade 8 you get from anywhere. So that's a very difficult bend and a very impressive reverse from anybody, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I think anybody that can reverse a grade 8, whether pads are touching or not, is like a hell of a feat.
That's a great bend. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard one.
Yeah, then we moved on to the braced bending portion. And I can't exactly remember the measurements of the bars I did, but I was pretty happy with my results. I completed both of those.
Cool.
And then we moved on to the snapping medley. And the snapping medley was, you just had to snap 660Ds, and you had to snap like these little tiny little pieces of nails that were like less than an inch long and one David Horn pad.
So yeah, I'm familiar with those, yeah.
I had no idea about the technique about those, but I thought it was going to be easy. I had no idea. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, snap these out in front of me, because you had to do the snapping unbrace.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't snap a single one of those.
Especially after a day of bending.
Yeah. I smoked the 60Ds in the snapping.
Yeah.
Once I moved on to those little tiny nails rolled up in the one David Horn pad, I would move it a little bit, but then I couldn't open it. And after closing it, I unrolled it out of the pad, and I couldn't roll the pad quite back on it. And it was pretty much a mess from there. So
yeah,
after 25 minutes, I couldn't do anything else. So after that, Don got first place overall, to be expected, you know, and Mike Rogowski got second place. And Mike's a great guy. He's super helpful. You know, he'll help you out with anything. Like if you need advice or recommendation on something, Mike's there. Mike's got an answer for you like that. So he's a really great guy. And he's really impressive too. The dude has huge forearms.
Yeah,
he's just like, damn, you know. I mean, that's what you get being King Kong winner, you know.
Yeah, he's super strong for sure.
Yeah, and I didn't expect it, but I ended up getting third place overall, which I was really happy
with. Nice, that's awesome. Yeah, it looks like such a cool event. I love all the, you know, the different feats that Don chooses each year. It just looks so fun. It's awesome.
I like that it's different every year, you know. That's a big part about it, and I really appreciate the people that made the effort to come out here. You know, they either flew or drove. Like Alex had to fly from New York. John Mauser and Hannah, they drove all the way from where they were at. I think it was North Carolina. No, it was West Virginia, excuse me. And there is a gentleman named Mark who also drove like 10 hours to go there. So like, what's this event without these people flying or driving 10 hours?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what would we have? Like 3 guys.
Yeah.
You know, so those people who make the effort to come out to that event, they're the real winners, in my opinion. They mean everything to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. It's awesome. It's cool that Don keeps it going each year. I like just hearing about it, you know. It's great.
It is. It's a great event, and I'm beyond thankful for it. You know, a big part about growing up is gratitude.
Yeah, sure.
It was something my dad always taught me. He always taught me to, you know, have gratitude and what's the word I'm looking for? Humility. Humility and gratitude are big things about growing up.
Yeah, that's a fact for sure. Not too much humility though. You want
to no, not too much.
You want to keep the spirit of when you went into the wrestling room when you were a kid and you were like, I'm the best.
That's right. You do have to have some glowing confidence if you are gonna achieve anything.
It's like, I think it's as long as you can deal with when it's shattered, you know, and then keep showing up after it, right? It's like, it's good to be confident, but if you can deal with it when it's broken, over whether it's getting your ass beat on the mat or getting defeated by some little bend or whatever it is like,
that's what really separates people, you know, right? When you lose, you either like, what, you go home and cry, or you go home and train and say, I'm gonna win next time.
Yeah, exactly.
Anytime I lost or anytime I failed something, it was always, I'm gonna go home and I'm gonna train.
Yeah, that's it. All right, well, now it's time for the Beyond the Bend medley. So I'm going to take you through this, a couple new ones on here. So favorite material to bend?
Cold rolled steel, for sure.
How about hardest material to bend for you?
I have real difficulty with the thicker and bigger hot rolled steel pieces because I have a very, very, very strong kink and a really good sweep. But hot rolled steel starts to bind and it has a really, really tough crush. So when I do like anything 3/8 and I'm getting the hot rolled steel, the crush is the most difficult portion for me.
Wow. Yeah, makes sense. Strongest bending style for you?
Double pads, double overhand.
Right on. And weakest style?
I want to say bare hand, but I actually have some pretty decent bare hand bends, so I'd have to go with like Heslip, right, which I don't practice.
As a little aside from the bare hand thing, sometime in the last year you posted like your friend's father or something like that, that just like picked up an A2 and did it bare hand, double underhand. Like, tell me a little bit about this. I gotta know.
Okay. So the guys I work with, I work on their father's truck, and their father is a guy named Ira. Ira's a little bit older. Ira's in and he's gone through a lot in life. Like when he was younger, there's a story I always like to reference where he got his leg ran over by a semi truck by the wheels on one side. And luckily enough, his femur did not shatter, but he had a hole in his calf about the size of like a toilet paper roll. Wow. And when they took him to the hospital, they were going to amputate his leg immediately. And he begged him not to. He was like, you're not taking my leg away from me. And they looked at him and they're like, you're going to lose it, man. Like, either way, if we let you keep it right now, you're going to lose it later.
Yeah.
You know, working and working hard and taking care of his boys, you know, he has three sons. That's everything to Ira. So I don't know how, but Ira, I think a lot of it has to do with willpower and the mindset that he had. I don't know how, but he kept his leg and he still walks very fine to this day. He has no issue walking. I mean, he has a couple like knee problems, but that's more or less from doing manual labor for 40 years than it is from, you know, that accident. But so Ira has always been working hard, always done manual labor, and he's got these huge hands, like gigantic hands, very thick. And I would show Ira like that I would bend steel and stuff like that. And he always thought, he was like, oh, that's really, really cool. Yeah. And one day I was working with him. He was working on the truck with me instead of one of his sons. And I had some steel with me that I went to show some guys at the warehouse. And Ira asked me if he could have one of them. And so I gave him a Harito A2. I was like, you can have this one. I'll show you how to bend it later. And he just started bending it in front of me. Like he didn't like, he just tried barehanded. And I was like, stop. I was like, don't do that. And he just kept going at it. And he held it. So he had the head of the bolt, like basically jammed in his thumb pad. And he held the other part, like the threading of the bolt and his other thumb pad. And he basically like did kind of a weird, like mixture of like double overhand and reverse. And he basically turned it into that fish hook.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it blew my mind.
Yeah.
I was like, no way. And Ira was like, was that pretty good? And I was like, that's very good, Ira. And I was like, man, next time you need to use pads. Like, I thought you did all of them without pads. And I was like, no, Ira, I've shown you my bends. I always use pads. Please don't do that again. And ever since then, I've been bugging him to try some stuff. But he's very tired and he doesn't work on the truck anymore. And, you know, I'll try to encourage him to try some stuff, but he says right now he's not ready. He's got some things to take care of, but yeah, he is interested in getting back into shape. So he says once he gets back into some better shape, he'd like to try some stuff with me.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I mean, one and done, if you bare hand the A2, I think you can just call it a day right there. So if he never does anything else, then there. Wow. That's a cool story. All right. What's something outside of bending and strength training that you enjoy?
Nothing.
Boom. You know who the other person to say that it was in all the episodes?
Probably David Regan.
Yep, that's who it was.
I used to unicycle before I did bending.
You used a unicycle?
Yeah, I was really into unicycling. But once I got into bending and strength sports, I really don't have any other hobbies or anything else.
Jiu-jitsu is waiting for you, man. It's waiting.
I've been meaning to try it because Don, you know, he rolls and he's been focusing more and more on that. So I've been kind of itching to get back on the mat.
If you have a bunch of wrestling experience and you're a strong guy, you're going to go in there and just make a bunch of white and blue belts cry because wrestling is superior to most fundamental jiu-jitsu. And that's as a person that never wrestled. I will say that. And then you'll go with the upper belts and you'll be like, oh, I do need to learn this, but you're so far ahead of the game knowing wrestling that as long as you, and it sounds like you have the attitude to do so, as long as you can embrace the differences of it being the guard position and not going belly down and stuff, you'll love it, man. And I have a great friend, Max, who wrestled all through elementary school, all through college, that just got his blue belt in 8 months. It's like, it's super fast. And that's all because he's just so fundamentally sound as a grappler. And he was able to just use what he was good at, but then embrace the things he needed to work on. And it's like so many guys, especially in no-gi jiu-jitsu, like without the uniform, are all wrestlers that are just finding another place to like scratch that itch, you know? So I definitely, you'd go with Don, man, you'll love it.
I think I'll plan on it sometime, for sure.
Report back. All right. What's the one bend that's gotten away so far? Something you've attempted, but you haven't taken down.
Okay. So, you know, the Bend Sport Canada Nanook?
Oh, yeah.
About 9 months ago, I attempted to cert it, and I bent it off center, and it was right at 2 inches if you measure it off center. But according to the rules, you're supposed to measure from the bolt head. Mm-hmm. So that bend did not pass. And I've not attempted to cert it again. Like I've done some P edgings and stuff like that, like P 6-inch edgings.
Yeah.
So I think I could do it, but it's going to like take a, you know, I'm going to have to like take a specific day to actually like try to do that. That's probably the one thing that's gotten away from me.
Cool. That'd be. And then will you get the dog tags? Will you be an elite steel bender at that point?
Yeah, definitely.
There you go. all right, who's the strongest person you know? Is it the your boss there with the bare hand bend or somebody else?
I'd say my great-grandfather was the strongest person I knew.
Nice.
He was a World War II veteran, and he was in the Battle of the Bulge. And he was a minesweeper, and one day they were clearing out a bunch of mines and some guys dropped a big log on a mine and it blew everything up. And the way that he described it to me as to what happened was he was thrown down onto the ground. He was bleeding from his ears. And this is heartbreaking, but he told me I felt bits and pieces of my friends falling on top of me.
Yeah.
And he lost his hearing mostly after that. And he had so much shrapnel stuck inside his body. It was coming out of his body until he died.
Jesus.
There would be so like after he completely healed, there'd be pieces of shrapnel like in his chest and his arms. And I remember like 12 years ago, there was a big piece that ejected itself out of his arm.
Yeah.
And he was always a great person. He always gave to his community. And with the type of mindset that he had, he was without a doubt the strongest person I ever met.
Yeah, nice. Good answer. All right. What's the best piece of advice you were ever given? This could be in regards to strength training or just life in general.
Well, that's actually a pretty tough one, you know. I'm not sure, man. That's really tough, but I do know, my father always told me that if you dream about something enough, if you want something enough and you like envision it, you know, you manifest it.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer in manifestation, because if you meditate, your brain can change shape. You can get new folds and stuff like that. So if you can change the shape of your brain just by thinking, just by sitting down and meditating, God knows what else you could do. You know?
So, for sure.
I think always keeping the mindset and believing in yourself and manifesting your dreams is the best piece of advice that I've ever gotten.
Right on. Where do you see steel bending going in the future? What do you foresee?
I'm not sure where I see it, but I hope with things like this podcast and, you know, the community that we have, that it does nothing but grow.
Right on. And if you could bend steel with one person, living, dead, across the world, whatever, if you could have one steel bending session with one person, who would it be?
It would be Alexander Denisovsky for sure.
Nice.
Either that or Batras, because they both have done red nail level or harder barehanded.
Yeah.
So I would definitely train with those guys for sure.
Nice. And what's the funniest reaction a person has had when they find out you spend your time bending pieces of metal in half?
So I went to my grandmother's house to help her install like a chandelier. I brought some steel with me to show my grandmother. And I took out a bastard nail and some single leathers, and I just casually rolled it up on both ends. And I was like, this is the type of stuff I do, Grandma. And I showed her me bending it. And she looked at me, she was like, that can't be safe. Your face got so red.
Yeah.
I thought you'd explode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was like, you don't got to worry, Grandma. I'll never explode from bending. That's probably the best reaction I've ever gotten.
Nice. But, all right. Well, we're about to wrap it up. So in closing, and in the case that I continue doing these on some type of regular schedule, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show that hasn't been on?
So Charles Strange is always a great choice.
Yeah.
And my other shout out would be Phil McMahon, because both of those guys actually started bending steel or were kind of aware of it and into it in the early 2000s, when it was first kind of popping up, you know. So those guys have been around for quite a while and have seen the scene of the sport. And I those are both two great dudes, and I'd love to watch a podcast with either of them.
Well, super strong for sure. Yeah, suggestions. All right, how about tips and or advice for beginner benders?
I do recommend what Don recommended to me when I first started, is to develop your hand toughness first. You know, it's not like when you train stuff like gymnastics, the first thing you develop is mobility. And so mobility and hand toughness are two very important aspects of bending. And I think far too much people start with double pads way too early, and they focus on chasing bigger and bigger bars with double pads, but their hand toughness doesn't go anywhere. And I don't think that's helpful at all.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And if people want to get a hold of you, ask you some questions, where can people find you on social media and stuff?
Well, I have Instagram. It's just my first and last name smashed together. And I have a YouTube, but I'd have to like give you a link to my YouTube channel.
All right.
Cool.
And anything else, anybody else you want to give a shout out to before we wrap it up?
I'd just like to give a shout out to Alex Guiha, Charles Strange, Phil McMahon, Kyle Mertz, and Devin Hoover, because we all ship each other steel. We're part of the Besties Box group. Right. And, you know, those guys are awesome. They really make my day, you know, when I talk to them.
Right on. That's cool. All right, everybody else, I want you to check out my friend Andre's company, Thumper Things, if you want some cool rash guard and shorts for when you start jujitsu. Order that up. I'll soon have a promo code, so you guys can save a little bit of money on that. One Sleeve BJJ, my friend, also makes jujitsu gear, so go order some of that. Perito, as always, obviously best sir out there. Ben Sport Canada, go get on that roster. Eat Chalk, Get Big. Buy nails from him, and so he can continue to support the community. And that's about it. London, thanks for hanging out, man. This was a blast.
Thank you so much for having me, man. I love talking to you.
All right, we'll talk soon.
For sure. Keep in touch, all right?
All right, bye.
He's up, man.